For over a century now, the federal government had forced indigenous children to attend boarding schools to unlearn their native heritage and assimilate into a white culture. Earlier this week, to mark Indigenous Peoples Day, Governor Tony Evers issued an apology for Wisconsin's participation in this practice. The governor also called for an investigation into the history of Indian boarding schools, mirroring an effort happening now at the federal level. To uncover what happened at these schools where unknown numbers of Indigenous children have died, we're talking about the history and the legacy of Indian boarding schools. We're talking about the truth and reconciliation. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. If you had relatives or ancestors who attended one of these Indian boarding schools in Wisconsin or in other states, how did that affect you and your family? We would like to hear your story this afternoon. Call us, 1-800-642-1234. Also up on our Facebook page today, or you can email us, ideas@WPR.org. Our guests, Patty Lowe, professor at the Medill School of Journalism and director of the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research at Northwestern University. She's also the author of The Indian Nations of Wisconsin, Histories of Endurance, and a citizen of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe. Patty, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much, Jay McGuetch, to my Native friends.
Also joining us this afternoon, Levi Rickert, who is the publisher and editor of Native News Online and the editor and publisher of Tribal Business News. Native News Online has been working on an ongoing investigation of Indian boarding schools. He's a citizen of the Prairie Band of Potawatomi Nation. And Levi, I'd like to welcome you back to Central Time as well.
Well, thank you, and McGuetch.
Patty, let's begin with your family story and the way that Indian boarding schools impacted your family.
Yes, thank you. My grandfather, Edward Denamy, went to an Indian boarding school. Well, he was missionized at a school near the Keweenaw Bay Indian Reservation in Michigan, where his mother lived. And then most of his schooling took place at the Toma Indian Boarding School in Wisconsin. His experience was very militarized. Children marched to the dining halls, they marched to the dormitories, they marched to their classes, and little boys drilled every morning at 6 a.m. with wooden rifles and little cadet uniforms. And so that militarization really became ingrained. And when World War I broke out, the exodus of Native boys into the military was tremendous. And my grandfather, like many, you know, almost 15,000 other Native Americans, enlisted in World War I. It was a seamless transition from the boarding schools to the training camps to the front lines. The Native soldiers experienced a casualty rate 5 times higher than any other group. So, you know, there were definite consequences.
Levi Rickert, tell us about your family's relationship and history with Indian boarding schools.
Well, my grandmother, Ellen Moore, she attended a boarding school in Genoa, Nebraska. Unfortunately, she never really talked to us about it. But from what I have learned as a Native person, number one, and then two, as a journalist, some of the ramifications have lived through our family as a result of her experience there. And I just feel like I'm happy, first of all, that you are highlighting this topic today, because it is a topic that many non-natives don't even know about. And when you say boarding schools, oftentimes boarding schools are where wealthy people send their children off to. But when you talk about Indian boarding schools, you talk about a drastically different situation where they were met, as Patty just said, and good to hear your voice, Patty.
Hey, Levi. Bonjour.
Bonjour. And so, no, but it's just some really tragic findings that we are uncovering at Native News Online. And so I'm happy you are highlighting it today, Lee.
Well, we are talking about a federal government policy that was of family separation. So it still reverberates today, and the calls for truth and reconciliation, at least to some degree, seem to be louder than they have been before at the federal level. And now on Monday with the governor of Wisconsin, who when he announced his executive action and his formal apology, said that at one time there were at least 10 Indian boarding schools in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and other students were... other children were shipped out of state. And Patty, right. I know this is about people and not numbers, but how can we get our handle on the scope of this story?
Yeah, you know, Lee, I spent about 30 years ago when I was working on my dissertation, I went down a rabbit hole of boarding school horror stories at the National Archives of the Great Lakes Indian Agency, which actually is here in Chicago. And you know, the stories that have come out of Kamloops really focus on the numbers of graves in that particular boarding school. But there were graveyards attached to almost every Indian boarding school across the country. And we think of this story really in terms of numbers, the numbers of human remains that turn up. But you know, my experience in the archives told, you know, it's horror stories of overcrowded conditions at the three government boarding schools in Wisconsin, children sleeping two and three to a bed. And so when tuberculosis and diphtheria and trachoma and influenza hit a community, it just swept through these boarding schools. You know, children received half an education. They learned to read, write, and do arithmetic in the morning. And then in the afternoons, they learned how to, you know, be good, subservient, second-class citizens, baking bread, washing floors, pitching hay. You know, they were groomed to become a second-class citizen. Some children rose above it, but overall, it was a really failed educational experience.
Our guest, Patty Lowe, joining us this afternoon, citizen of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe and Levi Reckert, who is a citizen of the Prairie Band of the Potawatomi Nation. And Levi, one of the stories that is told are the children from Wisconsin who were shipped out to the Carlisle Indian Industrial School all the way in Pennsylvania. And some of the bodies that have been disinterred and brought home since then. But as I understand it, one Oneida Nation councilman is still calling for the return of more of these children.
Yes, and we actually had a reporter who went to Carlisle, Jenna Koontz, who's done an excellent job in reporting from Carlisle, and she will actually be going to Rosebud. We got a grant from the Annenberg Foundation to do some data collection, so we're really proud of some of that work. But yes, there are children that need to be returned, and one thing that was shocking to me this summer is that some people have been working on recovering their ancestors, their bodies of their ancestors for decades. And I'm talking 40, 50 years. And that is one of the things that I find very astounding is that a lot of people just haven't known about it. And as a journalist, I didn't even know about that. They have spent decades, literally. And so we're going to have a live stream, Native News Online, in November, in one of the planning sessions we had just as recently as this afternoon, is to try to get some of the people who have been actively, give them a voice. They have been working diligently for decades, and they really have not had a voice. And so that's what we want to do. And it's, whether it's Oneida, I don't really care where it is. We want to give voices to these families.
Why has it been so difficult to bring these remains home?
Well, quite frankly, the U.S. Army has a different interpretation of the Native American Repatriation Act, Graves Act, that goes back to 1990, that they don't feel like, because they are the U.S. Army, they don't have to adhere to that. And so we've done at least one article on it, and we would dispute that interpretation. And so we're going to try to put pressure on the U.S. Department of the Interior to say, take a side on it. So far, they've been somewhat neutral. And I know that Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, who actually is a member of the citizen of the Laguna Pueblo, she happens to be the first American Indian Native American, whatever term you want to use, cabinet member in a presidential secretarial role. And so, number one, we as Native people are very, very proud that she's in that position. And I would doubt that we'd be as far as we are in terms of an investigation at the federal level had a non-Native been in that position. And so we're really proud of that. But we really need to see the Department of Interior fall on the side of families and try to tell the Army, U.S. Army, you have it wrong, folks. You need to agree to abide by what the federal law says about the return of these loved ones.
Levi Rickards, the editor and publisher of Native News Online and Tribal Business News, joined by Patty Lowe, who is the director of the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research at Northwestern University. And we want to hear from you this afternoon at 1-800-642-1234 if you've got a story to tell. We've got a forum for you. The federal government, the state of Wisconsin, are investigating what happened in Indian boarding schools, but is that enough? How should the government right the past wrongs that continue to affect Indigenous communities today? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to join us today. We'll pick up the conversation next here on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today, and let's pick up our talk with Patty Lowe and Levi Rickard about the legacy of Indian boarding schools here in our backyard and throughout North America, a scope which may be staggering, but the stories are individual, real, and continue to reverberate today. Patty Lowe is the director of the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research at Northwestern University, and Levi Rickard is the publisher and editor of Native News Online. And while the scope may be staggering, there are individual stories that help us understand why this legacy continues today and why there needs to be some sort of understanding of the truth and some attempt at reconciliation. Patty, would you share us the story of Lucy Skye?
Yes. I came across a batch of letters that were in response to a request by the Indian Agency of the LaPointe Agency in about, maybe 1910 or so, asking how their Indian girls were doing. These were letters sent to white farm women with whom Indian girls had been placed. Initially, Native children were allowed to go back to their reservations, but during the summertime, but so many of them didn't return in the fall because their parents hid them that they came up with something called the outing system, where they would place Indian children from boarding schools with white families to work over the summer. And these children were definitely exploited. I mean, they were getting between 25 cents and a dollar a week, where the prevailing domestic servant wage in a rural area was about $2.75. So these children were working six days a week, 12 hours a day. And I remember just kind of collapsing I'd been in this archive reading, just these horror stories. And it was this batch of letters that just brought me to my knees. One of the women was writing about this young 16-year-old girl from Lac des Flambeaux and saying that she wasn't worth the 25 cents she paid for her that summer, because all she did was stand in a corner and cry when she wasn't on task. And she reported she wasn't foolishly spending her money because they lived 25 miles out of town. And so there was no place for her to go to spend money. And they tried, they magnanimously offered to take her to church every Sunday and she refused. And I'm thinking about this poor young girl being isolated, and heartsick and broken, and the arrogance of this woman was just overwhelming to me. And these are the kinds of stories that I think people need to hear so they really understand the trauma that these children went through.
Do we have any idea what became of Lucy Skye?
I don't. I think she has relatives on the Flambeau and Bad River reservations. And this is, another thing that I'm really interested in is connecting some of these ancestor stories with people, contemporary people that are still surviving and thriving on reservations. Because, Lee, we talk about generational trauma, but Native people did not survive because of generational trauma. We survived because of generational ingenuity and creativity and you know, these stories need to be told. How did we get from this 16-year-old exploited girl to her relatives that are still living and thriving today?
And Levi Rickert, while I cannot see you, I have to imagine you are nodding your head in agreement. As you point out, there are people who went to Indian boarding schools, children who went to Indian boarding schools that are actually younger than you are today. Still around.
That's true. And here in Michigan, we had the Holy Childhood up in Indian school up in Harbor Springs, Michigan. And that did not close until 1984. I interviewed, and has not been published yet, but interviewed a young man who actually attended there and listened to his stories. Just as Patty said, these are some horrific stories that you listen to. And when you talk to the other people, such as the chairperson of the Little Traverse Bay Bands of the Odawa Indians, she went to a boarding school. She tells at this particular school is run by Catholics, and the nuns actually molested and raped the boys. And the Grand Rapids Press did a really good job, I want to say 1993, of reporting this. And so I talked to one of the reporters recently, and he told me that it was just really unbelievable back then. And so, Lee, by the time some of the stories broke out in Philadelphia with the priest, it was not shocking to Native people. We knew these stories. And so, but back to the tribal chairwoman up, she talks about her brother was molested and how he would never marry. He never wanted to touch a woman. And we were at the Straits of Mackinac, actually at the Line 5 protest or rally up there. And she looked out into the Straits of Mackinac and with this, she said he would have made a great father, but he never wanted to touch a woman because he had been raped by these nuns. And so those kind of stories are just horrific. And there are countless. And that's the shame of what happened. And Patty talks about intergenerational trauma. And I think that's what our people are going through right now. And we at Native News call it a time of reckoning. It's time for us to really take the bull by the horns and tell these stories, but at the same time, look at how we can heal as a community and move forward. But I think before we can heal, and healing, as we know, is not a one-time, you can't go to a one-time event and think everything's going to be great. It's a lifelong journey, the healing process. And I think that's what I think is somewhat remarkable with Deb Holland's initiative. It's going to allow us to really reckon with what we have to face and talk about it. And Patty, you can weigh in here. I know people just will not talk about it because go ahead, Patty.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, you're absolutely right. I mean, some of the trauma is so deep, but what I find really remarkable is, you know, this horrible failed educational experiment that was conducted on Native people. Some Native children took the tools of assimilation. You know, they're forced to read, write in a different language and give up their. And people like John Echohawk, who founded the Native American Rights Fund, they used the tools of assimilation as weapons to fight for Indian treaty rights and sovereignty. And I find that to be, you know, some comfort in all of this. Boarding schools were a terrible idea, but yet, you know, there were some children that not only survived, but managed to turn that experience into motivation to help them fight for their people.
Using the tools of assimilation for liberation. From our guest, Patty Lowe, a citizen of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, also joined by Levi Rickert, who is a citizen of the Prairie Band of the Potawatomi Nation, as we take a look at the legacy of Indian boarding schools and what comes next. And there's another unintended consequence, Patty, that I'd like to bring up, and that is for many ancestors of survivals, the struggle for tribal membership and benefits is a result of Indian boarding schools.
You know, that's the really interesting story. You know, a lot of our grandparents met in Indian boarding schools, and I think this is why, you know, Native America is so pan-Indian, and it also is, you know, has a lot of solidarity. But, you know, you have intermarriage, and you know, the children of those original unions may be marrying outside their tribe, and then their children marry outside their tribe. And so we have full-blood Native children who are one-eighth Ho-Chunk and one-eighth Lac-Couturé, one-eighth Odawa, one-eighth, you know, a Pueblo, and not enough blood quantum to be a legal, you know, a legal citizen of any particular tribe. And this is another problem that is really causing a lot of anxiety in Indian country.
With a couple minutes that we have left, what steps are next, and what role can we play? Levi, I'll ask you first.
Well, we are, at Native News Online, we are going to do some live streams just to really educate our people. I say we know a lot about it, but truthfully, there's a lot to learn. I'm learning every single day from this experience through our investigation. But we're waiting the result of the Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative established by Deb Haaland. And they, the charges that they will have a report back to the secretary on April 1st. So we are really anxiously wanting to see what those results look like. I think that they're going to come back with, there were like 370 boarding schools across the United States, and they didn't really have enough time and enough money to do what really a good job. So I really think they're going to ask for an extension, but I think that there's a lot of work to be done.
Patty, what role can we play?
Well, you know, the boarding schools robbed entire generations of Native people of our languages, our culture, our ceremonies, and this is really creating a lot of anxiety in our communities because culture is embedded in the language. So when Native people are able to take charge of their own education, and I'll mention Wadoka Dadding and Lac-Couturé, the Indian Community School of Milwaukee. You know, when Native people are left to solve our own problems and people aren't standing in the way, we do marvelous things. I like to quote my colleague Pam Silas, who's Menominee Oneida. She said, you know, we don't need people to lift us up. We just need people, you know, to have our back. We know what we need. You know, I think the federal government could give us some resources to really enrich our Native educational program.
Thank you both for joining us this afternoon. Patty Lowe is the director of the Center for Native American Indigenous Research at Northwestern University. Levi Rickard is the publisher and editor of Native News Online. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is Central Time on the Ideas Network.